part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com.
How was Comic-Con?
Comic-Con was amazing, man. You know, we went in. I wasn't expecting the campaign to be completely funded by the time I hit the doors. So it was fantastic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Great. Great. So you had had time to relax and enjoy it, in other words.
Yeah. I wasn't pushing. It was just, you know, it was just really seeing friends and checking stuff out. Like, I got a chance to be on the floor all day Wednesday, and I felt like I bumped into almost everybody I knew on Wednesday, which was fantastic. So I got to say hi to a bunch of people. There are a few people that I missed here and there, and it was a crazy busy convention this year. It was really surprising.
All right, cool. Well, as we begin this conversation, let's just say that this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn, and I have on the line with me a very special guest. His name is Don Nguyen, and you are an artist, storyboard artist, cartoonist, comic book artist. You are a jack of all artist trades, correct?
Yes, that's selling you higher than I feel like I should be sold.
Well, we're here to sell, baby. That's what this is about. We're here to sell. No, that's great. No, I mean, you and I met. First, let's say what you're here for. You have a Kickstarter.
Yes, I do.
That is currently online. We're recording on Thursday, August 1st. By the time this goes up, it's going to be Monday. So there's probably going to be like 3 or 4 days left, correct? At that point. But you've already funded, but it's always good to have more money. So where can people find your Kickstarter, and what is your Kickstarter for?
The Kickstarter is called Pablo the Gorilla. It is for my very first full creator-owned, creator-created, written, drawn, everything comic. If you go to PabloTheGorilla.com, it'll redirect you to the Kickstarter. Or if you're on Kickstarter, just look up Pablo the Gorilla.
Nice, nice. Yeah, you and I met at like WonderCon through my friend Dave Schrader.
Yes.
And we hung out for a little bit, and we were trying to finagle tables, like see if anybody had dropped out, like the tables, because that was sort of like my scheme. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to wait on a table. And you were like, what? Like, you can do that? And I was like, apparently so. And I got lucky enough to get a table. And then I think you and I kind of like disconnected after that, because I was just so like frantic. I was like, what? I got a table. Like, I was like freaking out. You know?
I did too.
Yeah, it was crazy. Oh, you got a table at WonderCon too?
Yes.
So, I didn't know that. You never got back in touch with me.
Yeah, a few of us, I guess, that were there and were on the wait list ended up getting through.
That's awesome.
I think like 4 to 6 people at least had dropped out of WonderCon for whatever reasons. And I hope they're all okay and they're doing well, but thank you for not being there and for allowing us to take your space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was a fun show. I mean, I think that's the first big con I'd sort of ever done like by myself. So,
really? Okay.
Yeah. I was just, I think big one. Yeah, a big one. I tend to try to do like smaller local cons because of the costs and stuff. And, I think that was like sort of like the first like, ooh, now it's WonderCon, you know?
Yeah.
So it was cool. Oh, I didn't know you got a table. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we were incommunicado for that reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Same here. I dropped off because it was like, you got to run, get your stuff, you know, head towards the table and be like, okay, now I got to set up. And then the people there are like, what's this dude doing? You know, he wasn't here yesterday, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. I felt that much more than any other time where I just like randomly popped up and people were like, oh, there's that guy. I guess the person that I had taken over, and I don't know if you had that same experience, but they had been there before and they were good friends with their booth neighbors.
Oh,
So then I was a little bit pariah, but I think I'm a pretty gregarious, friendly guy. So we all warmed up to each other and hung out.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a great experience. Yeah, that was where I first started my my big push for doing an email list.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I had taken that on the advice of both my wife and Jeff Ryder, who does Cloud Wrangler Comics. And he actually has a Kickstarter running right now for his second book.
What's that? It's called Cloud Wrangler Comics?
Yeah, his company's called Cloud Wrangler Comics. And his book, which I'm actually going to be doing a pinup for, I'm slated to do some artwork for him, is called The Arcane Cocktail Enthusiast.
Oh, that's
it's actually a really fun book. I've had the pleasure of reading the first one because I bought it, and then the second one because I need to do the artwork piece for him.
Yeah.
So if you have a chance, check that out. He's also completely funded, and I think he's got, I think we're almost on the same timeline. He might have a few more days ahead of me, but I'll have a piece in that as well.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out. Well, let's talk about your book. Let's talk about Pablo the Gorilla. Let's not sell other people's stuff. Let's sell your stuff. So tell me about Pablo the Gorilla. I mean, I've obviously seen the Kickstarter video. I've contributed. It looks like a really fun sort of like concept and book. Obviously, the title is called Pablo the Gorilla. So it is about a gorilla named Pablo, assuming, unless you're pulling some like weird Alan Moore magician craziness.
It's definitely about a gorilla. He is an albino cyborg gorilla that delivers pizza.
Uh-huh.
And he just wants to do his job and live his life, but the government that created him is coming after him, and they want him back because he's sort of gone AWOL, and they have other intentions for the equipment that they created. And then we also find out that something a little more insidious is tracking him down too.
Sure, sure. And you would say, and so it seems to me like in your Kickstarter video, you said, hey, if you, and this is sort of the vibe that I got like when I was checking it out. Hey, uh-huh. If you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think it was like 90s action comics and you have like an action figure of Cable on the video.
Yes.
Is that sort of like your era of comics? Like, are those the things that you kind of like loved growing up? I mean, I don't know how old you are or like what sort of got you started reading comics?
Shh, don't give it away. Yeah, I totally grew up in that era. I mean, when Ninja Turtles the movie, to date myself, came out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I'm probably older than you, but anyway, go ahead.
My little cousin and I watched that movie. He's actually not that little. He's only 3 years younger than me. We watched that movie 7 times in a row in the theater.
Oh, my God, really?
To the point we memorized every line and, like, every action. And then after that, because, you know, I would spend the summers – we would go to each other's houses, or not houses, wherever we lived, apartments, and hang out and have fun and play video games and stuff. And that entire weekend, I think all we did was draw Ninja Turtles and quote the movie.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, you know, that movie does not get enough credit. I remember seeing it in the theater and like really enjoy, like being surprised, like, and not really having been exposed to the Turtles.
Uh-huh.
Like at all beyond that movie, you know, knowing that they kind of existed. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't exposed to maybe indie books as much when I was younger, but I remember sitting in the movie theater and really just enjoying like the Jim Henson costumes and everything and like the different personalities. And I was probably in my late teens, like at that point. And I still really like, I liked Casey Jones. I liked like the whole thing. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And I think I tried to, I watched it. I may have it on DVD.
Uh-huh.
And I think I watched it several years ago. And to me, it held up for what it was. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with that. And, you know, my introduction to the Turtles growing up as a kid was through the cartoon.
Oh, okay.
You know, like the really lighthearted and like the Playmate toys were out and stuff like that. And so we were super stoked when the movie was announced and we were like, oh, my God, it's going to be a movie. And then, you know, we watched it and it was a little bit – it had a darker edge to it, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And, you know, I've always been into comics and I realized that the Turtles were a comic, but I'd never actually seen the Turtles comics before.
Sure.
And then I fell in love with the artwork, like the Eastman and Laird book, like how gritty it looked and like how chunky the characters were.
Yeah.
So then, you know, we were drawing like the movie characters. I was trying to like cop that style that the original Turtles book had. So I got really into it. So if you ever see me at a convention, ask me to draw Ninja Turtles. I will do it super fast. I can do it in like maybe a minute.
I don't think I've ever tried to draw one of the Ninja Turtles. I should try and do that. I don't know why, because I actually, it's funny because I didn't come across them. Like, I think I have this distinct memory of being like, because I'm originally from New Jersey, of being in a New Jersey mall and in a bookstore that had like a really big comic book section and picking up like a Ninja Turtles book. And for me, it was like all about the art. And I remember picking one and those were in black and white, right?
And being like,
what is this? And kind of like looking at it and being like a snob about it, like being like a little punk snob, like, oh no, like what is this, like a new Teen Titans ripoff or something? And I remember putting it back, but for some reason I think that movie and just sort of like the place that it took in our culture, like with the cartoons and everything, there's something about the property that I really, really enjoy. And a couple years ago, I think IDW released a couple of like hardcovers of the original collection.
Yeah.
And I got one in the mail. I got the first one in the mail and I opened it up, and, you know, no offense to Eastman and Laird, you know, I opened up the book and I looked at it and I was like, and I looked at the art and I was like, okay. Like, I don't know about this. Like I was very kind of put off at first, but then I was like, okay, let me read it. And I read it and it was just so much fun that I was like, okay, because I'm like, I read comics. Comics suck me in for the art, right? And so then sometimes I'll have to be like, somebody will have to be like, no, you need to read this, and I'll read it, and maybe, you know, the art style just didn't appeal to me or something, but then I loved it and I was like, this is great, and I bought all the other hardcovers, which I still have yet to read a ton of them. So, but I mean, that's totally my history of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I mean, you had said that you've always loved comics, like beyond Ninja Turtles. What are some of your first memories reading comics? Because obviously you seem to have been into them before Ninja Turtles.
So my earliest memories of comics, and this is a story I tell everybody, is my mom. We used to live up in Washington, in Seattle. I grew up in Burien.
Oh, okay.
When I was a little kid. So she went to Highline Community College, and whenever she would go study, she would take me with her to the library and just drop me off in the kids section.
Uh-huh.
So my very first floppies were picking up like Walt Simonson's Thor, John Byrne. They had like some just really crinkled up X-Men books there.
Oh,
and I think, he had done Man of Steel at that point too. So I vividly remember his Superman being like the best Superman I had ever seen in my life.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, anytime I wanted to try to draw Superman, I would emulate John Byrne's Superman.
Sure.
And from there, you know, I just try to explore more. And I actually – Annie was really big at the time too, I think. And I remember finding a big compendium of all the newspaper strips and, like, reading that and then reading, like, the original Detective Comics, I believe it was, with all, like, the Bob Kane, Bill Finger Batman stuff. So those are my earliest memories of coming into comics. And then we had moved to L.A., and this was like late 80s into early 90s. And that's when I started reading things like, you know, Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns. And that had a profound effect on me because I never realized Batman was so dark before.
Sure.
And then, like, you know, the battle he has with Superman where he's in the suit and he depowers Superman down with the kryptonite. And I was like, oh, my God, what is happening with two of my favorite characters? Also at the library back then, in L.A., libraries had floppies. So, I fell
in
love
with
McFarlane's run on Hulk. And then Spider-Man was a huge deal for me. And I fell in love with his art style with Spider-Man because it was so wild. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was pretty much all the Image founders, right? So you had right after McFarlane's run, he switched to Spider-Man. And then Eric Larson took over on Amazing. And then Jim Lee was doing X-Men. And I got...
Yeah.
Really into that, and Rob Liefeld, of course, doing X-Force, and we can talk about the merits of Rob Liefeld on another podcast.
Are there merits? Are there?
There are. I have thoughts about it. I really do, but you have to look from like a real fine art perspective to get it. And I actually feel like,
okay, that those two terms, Liefeld and fine art, don't seem to go together for me, but
it doesn't, but there's a way to talk about it. And I feel like that's the best way to do it.
So, yeah, I mean, Liefeld gets, and I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, trashing Liefeld. I mean, the guy helped change like comics history and stuff like that. And he gets a lot of crap and stuff like that, which, you know, I do agree with some of the critique of his art, but like, have you seen that image, that Image Comics documentary that they did like a couple years ago? I think it may be on Amazon now. But they interview him in it and he comes across like it's interesting to hear him tell his story and his perspective of like the time and stuff like that. And it's like, you sort of have to respect him for that. You know what I mean?
I mean, you know, those guys changed the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
For everybody. And the fact that Image remains as the top independent company still like boggles the mind. Because, you know, in college, right before college, I actually sold off most of my comics. Yeah. And I decided that I was like not going to be pursuing that. And, you know, I would do design work for the Alumni Association and stuff like that.
Did you want to draw like comics at one point? Like before? I mean, obviously you're doing a comic now, but was that like an aspiration for you when you were younger?
It was all throughout junior high and high school, which is, you know, that period of those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Dale Keown was like another big guy.
Oh, my God. Have you seen his work lately?
I know a lot of people like it, but I feel like it doesn't have the same energy it did when he did his run on the Hulk and on it. It's something about it. There's like a murkiness to his to the way it was inked. It really captured me, and I feel like it's a lot cleaner now, and I think people like it, but for me, I kind of miss like the murkiness of the inks.
Gotcha. I just saw a cover that he did recently, and I was like, I just wanted to blow my head off. I was like, yeah, why even try? it just made me go like, what? Anyway, continue with your thought about like wanting to get into comics.
Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, you know, the guy still obviously knocks it out of the park.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There was something about, like, the 90s energy, which is also where the Liefeld thing fits in, right?
Yeah. Because
his work now, I feel like he's trying to chase people's critique of him, and it doesn't have that same vivaciousness that...
Do you really? I don't... I think for me, you know... And we could talk... And I feel like this is a bit the same way for John Byrne.
Yeah,
a little bit. I feel like the energy has gone out of it. I don't think it's a chase of the art critique. There is a part of me that feels like Liefeld is just kind of like phoning it in a bit, and and I feel like Liefeld. I think it's Liefeld, right? I may be pronouncing it wrong. I feel that he could benefit from like some life drawing classes.
Yeah.
And I think that his style would change like dramatically, because for me, when I used to draw, it used to just be based off of like just all comic book stuff. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, it still kind of is. But the thing that sort of changed my perspective in a big way was life drawing classes, where I was like, oh, wow. You know what I mean? This changes everything, you know?
One of the biggest tips I ever got was actually the very first time I met Brian Stelfreeze. And that guy is like a pro's pro, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of sitting down with Brian Stelfreeze.
No.
And a lot of guys will talk about, like, if you ever ask Ed McGuinness or Mark Brooks about it, they will also talk about Brian Stelfreeze. I mean, he had the run on Black Panther, so I don't know if you can even talk to him anymore. Like, he might be just crazy busy with lines signing autographs or whatever. But, you know, the first time I decided, you know, I wanted to be a comic book artist was junior high, high school. And then in college, it just became a different priority. And I was like, I can't do that anymore. And then, you know, went to work years down the line. I decided to come back to it. And this was maybe, I would say, like 7 or 8 years ago at least. And we went to Big Wow, which used to be up in San Jose. It was like co-run by Frank Cho. And Brian Stelfreeze was like one of the headline guys that was there.
Yeah.
And I came over and I just was like, hey, I loved what you did on Shadow the Bat and, you know, the stuff that you're doing now. And I didn't realize, you know, he like was also a portrait artist because he was standing there doing a portrait commission.
Oh, wow.
Like, just like, take a look at my stuff and let me know what you think. And he just took time out of his day to look at my work and like give me words of encouragement, offer me tips, what to look at, how to think about panel layout and structure and storytelling.
Yeah.
And then the other thing he said, you know, is he looked at my figure work and he was like, it's pretty stiff what you had. And I had realized that, but I didn't know the best way to correct it. And so what he had me do, he's like, you know, if you can to do 30 days, that'd be great. But if not, every time you go out, just practice drawing people that you see on the street.
Uh-huh.
You know, just sit at a park bench and like look at how they're holding themselves up and like moving and like talking on the phone. And I got into the practice, especially, you know, when smartphones like the Galaxy Note came out, I'm on a Galaxy Note 9 right now, and I would take out my phone and I would just start drawing people, like just quick contour sketches, you know, quick body sketches. And that improved my skill and my ability to see how like people position themselves.
Sure.
So, you know, that's one of the things that I try to work on whenever I have a minute or two.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, it was actually taking a class, and I don't see myself as like a super great like artist or anything, but it definitely, I remember somebody specifically, you know, and this is before Facebook and all that stuff, like online, who I had done like some RPG like character drawings for, and they're like, wow, your art like really changed over the past, like what did you do? And I was like, I think I just took a life drawing class and it just made me look at things differently, you know what I mean? And that's something that I should do more of. You know, but I just don't get around to it. But yeah, I think that Liefeld is somebody who, you know, and I mean, even somebody like McFarlane, I think, like, I don't even know that they've done like serious like figure drawing, you know what I mean? Yeah. I think they have their own style and it's worked for them and they've done like really great with it, but you don't see like a ton of like change, you know what I mean, through the years. And it's almost like they're afraid to change because they might hurt their, you know, fan base. But then you look at somebody like, say, Stuart Immonen, you know, who over the years, and, you know, I guess he retired last year, you know, just like became like one of the best comic artists out there. And he was great to begin with, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Immonen, Olivier Coipel, like those guys
are a
different level. I don't know if you follow Olivier Coipel.
No, I don't.
Instagram, but every day he like puts something out there. I'm just like, oh my God, what is he doing?
Yeah. It's like, a lot of that can be daunting. Like I follow Frank Cho and every time he puts something up there and I'm just like, I'm just going to kill myself. Like, it's just like, but you know, I mean, that's the thing is, I mean, there's something for everyone. And I mean, I mean, you know, I have my webcomic, which is kind of like just something I can do in my spare time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like funny animals and stuff like that. But, you know, like these, the other thing you have to think is like, these are guys that draw all day, like every day, you know what I mean? So, you know, maybe there's time for them to grow, but we keep veering off from Pablo. Tell me a little bit more about, well, first of all, like you had said that you sort of wanted to get back into comics like seven or 8 years ago. Was that just something like you rediscovered the hobby, or you rediscovered comics, or had you been reading comics the whole time and something sort of like clicked in your brain and was like, I want to make my own? Because there's always that thing, right, that makes everyone go like, you know, from a fan to like, I want to make my own and maybe I can do that. So what was that sort of thing for you?
So comics had always been in the back of my mind. You know, I went to school and the idea was like, I would do, you know, the whole biology pre-med thing. I ended up hating it. But in my junior year, I decided to switch and go into art. But at UCLA, it's not like technical. They don't teach you illustration at all. There's no technical stuff. It's all theory. And I ended up doing fine art and primarily ended up doing sculpture and performative art.
Oh, wow.
So I've done like, you know, commissions for sculptures and stuff like that. And that's been great. And yeah, I did the gallery show thing, and it's tough, man. It's the art world. You know, like with anything, even in our business, it's a tough sell.
Sure.
And you really have to network. And it just wasn't for me. And so I ended up going and doing the corporate thing. And I worked for the Rand Corporation for almost 10 years.
Oh, wow. Doing what?
I was a research supervisor.
Oh, cool.
Started out as an interviewer, and then I became a supervisor, and I, you know, helped with like data analysis, did some light programming for them, and other stuff like that, which was great. It was really worthwhile, but I also kept drawing on all of my paperwork.
Yeah.
I would draw like on our dry erase boards and stuff, and my coworkers got to a point where they were like, "You seem like you want to be doing something else." And I was like, "No, I do."
Yeah, you know, that's funny because people will sit next to me in meetings. Like yeah. Some people will specifically sit next to me in a meeting and be like, "I just want to see what he's going to do." Like I just like it's always fun to sit next to you and see like yeah. what you're going to doodle out. And I'm like, "Oh, okay, you know, whatever."
Because, you know, there is something magical about watching a person create anything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we see it amongst ourselves, even just as artists. Like you can sit next to somebody you admire and just watch them all day long. It's like,
yeah,
you know, Kim Jong-gi, he was just at Comic-Con and he did a panel for an hour and a half, and I was completely hypnotized and just fixated on his work.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was completely speechless. And it's, you know, I think it's definitely that thing that people get absorbed by because maybe they don't have the skill or that level of skill, or it's something different that they'd like to acquire. So that's definitely part of it. But yeah, when I was at Rand, I just kept drawing on everything, and I was like, I want to just work on this and improve it. And thankfully, our family was in a position where my wife was like, why don't you switch and work out some of the ideas that you had back in college? Because Pablo actually started as a tag that I would do. I would tag gorillas instead of like, you know, tagging names or whatever. I actually drew little characters.
Okay.
And I always wanted to metamorphose it, I suppose, into a comic book character, but it was never quite right. And I think it was like 2008, 2009, DC had an online imprint called Zuda.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I submitted Pablo to that. And funny enough, those are part of the bonus pages in the book. So if you guys out there decide to come on board and join and pick up the comic, you'll actually see I take you through the process of what it took for me to get Pablo to where he is today as a character that I felt comfortable putting out in the world, that I thought people would really enjoy and like that art style. And that, again, it took a lot of work. But what happened was while I was at Rand and this was happening to me, I randomly decided to go back and check out my local comic book shop, which I hadn't visited in forever. Out in Culver City, and it was called, I think at that point it was Comics Inc. Before that it was Graffiti, and that's actually the Comic Bug in Culver City. And I walked in, and the three artists that hit me the hardest, because they all had books at that time, were Scotty Young, Chris Bachalo, yeah. and Umberto Ramos. And I've met those guys, and I've told each of them like how impactful their artwork was for me, because I realized at that point I'm not like an Olivier Coipel guy. Like I don't do that slightly realistic comic book style. I'm not Jim Lee, not like a David Finch kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm more, you know, like we're both kind of into like a more cartoonish style.
Yeah. Well, and I find it interesting. Like the thing that I should say, and I don't know if that this stands for you as well. For me, it's about what can I get done in my free time? You know yeah. what I'm saying? And like for me, like my webcomic, like, as hard as it is for me to say sometimes, like, this is not my best work. You know what yeah. I'm saying? But it's like, this is what I can do in my free time. And when, for me, it's like when I start drawing or I'm yeah. like drawing, like, I don't know about you, but I have a very self-loathing side. Like, as I'm going, I'm like, I hate this, but I'm going to keep going. I hate yeah. this, but I'm going to keep going. And it's only up until like the color stage uh-huh. where the fog for me starts to clear. And I'm like, okay, this isn't as bad as I thought it is. It's not Jim Lee.
Yeah.
It's not Scotty Young.
Yeah.
It's not, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah, yeah.
like this can compare with a lot of like other indie books out there. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
and yeah, no. Anyway, complete your thoughts. Sorry.
No, that's okay. This is why we're having this dialogue. It's like so great because, you know, I don't get to talk to a lot of artists about it all the time.
Sure.
Usually, like when we see each other, we pass by, we say hi to each other at a convention.
Yeah.
Also, like network or to be at our table or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But the thing for me was, you know, we as artists, I feel a lot of us are racked with self-doubt.
Yeah.
And the thing that kind of broke me out of that, and I don't know if you've you know, seen my how I sketch at conventions and do convention sketches, but everything I do is fairly detailed. And what it was my very first smartphone that I really fell in love with was the Galaxy Note 2.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because I never liked Samsung phones before, and the Galaxy Note 1 actually wasn't a great phone to me, but I picked it up, and you know, back and still today, they're Wacom digitized, right? So they have it's like holding a Cintiq in your hand.
Yeah.
And they had Autodesk loaded for the demo, and I used it, and instantly in about 5 minutes, I just got it, and I was like, this is a great device. And I picked it up, and then from there on, I started doing my daily sketch blog, Winning It, on WordPress. And, you know, for like the last 7 years, all I did was draw every day. And it didn't matter how bad it was. The idea was I would draw it and then just put it out there.
Uh-huh.
And if it was bad, it was bad, and I could go back and look at it. And if you go through the archives of the blog, you can actually see like how I improved and like constantly worked at certain things. And, you know, I don't even draw the same character the same way, like year on end, day after day.
Because sure.
You see new things and you want to incorporate that. And that's what it became about, is the act of drawing every day. And, you know, I'm at a point where that's all I do now, is I just draw all the time because, you know, that's the job, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I thankfully have that luxury where, you know, I'm working and I'm paid for doing storyboards for my phone or like doing concept work and like sending it out through Dropbox, which is great. But yeah, it just became one of those things where I just had to let go and not be afraid of failing and actually accept the fail. And like, you know, you're kind of going through it and talking about it a little bit too, which is like you're needling at the drawing and like you're working and reworking. And then in that process of doing that, like I myself found a joy in it. Like there's a certain joy of going, oh, you know what? This is not the best, but let's see how we can push it and like get it to kind of be like maybe a little crazier looking.
Sure.
And then, you know, that allows you to be a little freer and experiment with how erratic line work can be, which is something you definitely see in like fine art more. You see really huge angular lines and like crazy little doodles, like Cy Twombly does it. You know, a big artist that I really love is like Egon Schiele, who's like part of that expressionist school, and he would do these like figures that are really like gnarled and twisted.
Uh-huh.
If you ever listen to Bill Sienkiewicz talk, he will definitely mention that. And I was really into, you know, like expressionism and like even like the American expressionists, like Franz Kline, who would do these like large black brushstroke paintings. And then you find out later that he actually planned all of that. Like he didn't just go to the canvas with a giant paintbrush and paint in these like giant black blobs.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, stuff like that, like that sort of thinking, I think, is what helps me sometimes get over my mental block. And then the other thing is my wife would tell me, this is a really good tip for anybody who has artist block. I don't know if this would work for writer's block, but she's like, well, if you're on a page and the page isn't working, or you know, you're doing like a pinup or whatever, just take a break and do another piece. Like just start something else. And
then sure.
You come back to it. So,
yeah.
You know, trying to listen to what other people have to say about their techniques on how to deal with stuff like that. And incorporating that into my own way of thinking is, I think, what helped me kind of overcome that. And I'm still learning, you know, like every day is a new thing that I learn.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's interesting. You talk a lot about a little bit about like sort of like getting messy and, you know, and stuff like that. And that is something that, cause you know, when I was younger, like if yeah. I was drawing like a superhero or something,
yeah.
It's like, I had this idea where it's like, I'm going to do a drawing and I'm just going to draw it. And from beginning to end, and it's going to be like a perfect like drawing. And now these days, because I don't have a lot of time, or,
yeah.
You know, I find myself sort of tired at the end of the day, cause
yeah.
My job is not necessarily, you know, my day job is not necessarily illustration, but it's dealing with Photoshop and stuff like that and retouching
yeah.
And working on a Cintiq. So sometimes even just looking at a computer or whatever, I'm just like, nope, I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And these tablet computers have helped a lot though
yeah.
to make, you know, like I have a Samsung like notebook thing that you can draw on. And that thing is like perfect for me.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find myself doing, or have found myself doing, is sort of doing this thing where, and I started seeing, like, I think it was Gil Kane's Facebook page. Like, they had a Facebook page for Gil Kane.
Okay.
It seems like he was doing this for covers.
Yeah.
And I just never realized it. I thought all these guys like would just, like George Perez, I thought it would just like spring from, and they would just draw and it would just, you know, like magically. But I do it messy. Like, I just do my pencils like super messy. And if the arm screws up, I don't erase it. I just, you know, and it just becomes like a mess of scribbles. And then I'll scan that or into the computer and either go over it in software or like print it out on Blue Line. And re-pencil that, you know what I mean? And then maybe ink it or something like that. But I remember I just used to always, you know, be like, I've got to draw this drawing. And then if I screw it up along the way, then it's not worth it. You know, I have to start over and do it. And yeah, it's just a really interesting breakthrough that I made in my own head that I'm like, well, I don't have to have this original for somebody else. I'm just trying to create something here. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, again, it's like you have to go through the process to be able to arrive at your own conclusions. And I think that breakthrough for you is fantastic. You know, it's like also a lot of people may never reach that breakthrough for themselves, you know, and other people to like bounce their ideas off of. For you to come to that conclusion by yourself and like to be able to do that, it's a huge leap, you know.
Yeah, it just comes mostly from frustration. And again, a lot of self-loathing where I'm just like, you know, you just get tired of just being like, oh, God, you know, I just need to do this. But so like with Pablo, when did you like start making pages and stuff? Is it something that, like, was he something that was always like hanging around? I mean, you had said he'd been around since like maybe your high school days or whatever. Like
college,
kind of like on the fringes and stuff. But like, what made you like, I mean, not made you, but at one point were you like, when did you write sort of, did you write a script? Were you like, I'm going to write a script and then I'm going to draw that script, or sort of like, what was your creative process for bringing it to life?
So I would say it all took place probably within like the last 2 to 3 years in terms of like doing the script and getting story down and then like thumbnailing and, you know, boarding it all out. But really the biggest chunk was, you know, from the first time I had submitted to Zuda and gotten feedback.
Did he make it into Zuda or?
He did not. No, I knew nothing about making comics, but it was a good experience because they required you, I think at that point you had to submit 8 completed pages, and I didn't know anything about like how to make a comic, a digital comic. So I was like, oh, I'll just do it on paper and like color it with marker and we'll see how this goes, and then scan it in and send it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tried to do the lettering. So I got a bunch of feedback. I think it was Kwanzaa Johnson and I want to say Rod Peraza were the two guys who ran Zuda. And they gave really good feedback. You know, again, it was work on your anatomy, work on how stiff your characters look. But then they also broke down some really interesting things that I never thought of, like the whole don't use Comic Sans in your speech bubbles.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I didn't know about that. And then other tips. And I was in the community, so I would try to get tips from the different creators that were there, you know, about what they did to treat the artwork. Like once you do inks on paper, like how do you scan it and like make it look the way it does. And surprisingly, you know, I've run into Bobby Timoney a few times, but him and his brother had this comic Night Owls on Zuda. And those guys were really active in the forums and they were of big help for me trying to work on the comic. Because then I took the feedback that I was given and some of the tips they had on how to work in Photoshop and I did another attempt. I didn't submit it. I just try to rework the idea, but you know, it always sat there and it just wasn't quite right. So, you know, like I was telling you, once I got the phone and started sketching every day, I'd always go back and rework Pablo. I just kept doing it and doing it until I got into a style that I thought looked great and would translate well to the page. And that would be about 3 or 4 years ago. Like, it started to take form, and I started to do like just a short one page thing here and there. And I included that actually in the bonus material, one of the finished pages. And then from there, I was like, I think I'm at a point now where I can do a complete story. I'm not a writer. So what I did was I kind of went Marvel method with it. So I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago. I sat down. I was like, well, here's the story I want to tell. This is like the major arc, and it'll be so many pages. And this is just the plot. And then I just went through and, you know, did like a page outline. So I just wrote down all the page numbers. I just put down what I wanted to happen on them. And then I just drew it out. I just did thumbnails. I drew it out. And then once I tightened it, corrected it, I went back and finished it with dialogue and narration bubbles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So that's the process for it.
Nice, nice. And so you're just doing this like pretty much in your free time, right?
No, this is the job now. I've been drawing nonstop every day for like the last...
No, I mean drawing Pablo the Gorilla.
Oh, well, it's part of the job, you know?
Oh, okay. So
I'm putting out this comic. I'm working on an anthology with a friend right now, Andy Nordvall. Did you meet Andy at WonderCon?
I don't know. I may have. I met a bunch of people at that table that you were at, but
okay,
it was kind of like crazy.
Yeah, I must have introduced you to Andy. So Andy and I, we put out a book at last Comic-Con, actually, right before that. And a few months ago, hit Amazon number one in sci-fi and fantasy illustration. But it was our Inktober book. So we've done Inktober for the last 2 years. The first year we did it, we put out a book based on all of Jake Parker's Inktober prompts. And we were the first team, I believe, to do a complete narrative story with all 31 of Jake Parker's prompts from beginning to end.
Oh, wow.
And Andy is prolific. I mean, I did 31 plates of art, but the guy wrote 31 chapters. And, you know, right after that, he also does that NaNoWriMo thing where you're supposed to do like a 30 to 40,000 word novel. So he has practiced writing. And then last year we did Inktober as an Instagram comic. And that was insane. And I don't think I'll be doing it again. Because some days it was one pages, and then there were days where there were like four pages. So we're trying to put work out.
So were you doing like an Inktober comic for like every day, like of Inktober? Like,
yeah, we did it. It was anywhere from one panel to possibly like 3 or 4 pages.
That sounds brutal.
It was brutal depending on how we broke it up. But yeah, for 31 days we did that, and I felt like I was killing myself.
What is the name of the book so people can find it on Amazon?
The book is called Siren Song. Andy Nordvall is the author. That's probably the easiest way to search for the book. It's spelled N-O-R-D, V as in Victor, A-L-L, and Andy is just Andy. It's probably the best way to find that book. I was amazed. I didn't realize we would hit number one. And it's funny because, you know, the book came out, it took a whole year before it charted. We were like at 500,000th or something like that. But I think people have been enjoying it. So if you're out there and you picked up the book, please come back and leave us a review. Because I think we all have like 3 or 4 people that have left reviews so far. But I guess maybe word is getting around and people are enjoying that book. So thank you very much for that.
Is that what you were at WonderCon for? Because I remember you were like sharing a table. And so you've been creating comics before Pablo the Gorilla. I mean, I know that, but...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that book actually is not a comic. We've been calling it a graphic novella because it's just plates of art. And then
sure. People sell that kind of thing at Comic-Cons, you know.
Yeah, so it's print on demand, and that was one of the books that we were hawking. Andy also does a web comic called My Roommate the Internet, which is all the abhorrent things about the internet. If it was the worst roommate ever. So he was selling that. It's fantastic. He's got like over 20,000 followers on Instagram, I think.
Oh, wow.
That strip. So it's got its fan base. And then we did our comic for Instagram last year was called Smuggler's Curve. And we're reworking it now because it was – we weren't happy necessarily. We were happy with the idea and what came out of it, but we would like to go back and clean it up and make it a more clear story, because I think the parts of it were just too chunky, and it felt like it was like too much of a staccato in terms of storytelling. Like, yeah, it just needs to be smoother and crisper. And Andy has a really an amazing idea for it, so we're looking to pitch that, and we'll probably redo like 5 pages for that. And he's got another thing that we're working on, so it's a lot of things currently going on for me personally.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a lot. That's so when were you ready with Pablo to be like, I'm ready to go, like for the Kickstarter? I mean, like, what is it? Is this your first Kickstarter?
This is my very first Kickstarter, yeah. And the comic is completely done on the main story side. So I had finished it by CCR, Comic-Con Revolution Ontario.
Okay.
And when I hit the door there, I was like, all I need to do now, because I just had finished inking it, is coloring it and lettering it. And that was it. So the book is done. That part is over. I just got my last pinup last night from Marquise Phillips. We have another pinup.
I saw that.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, right? It
looks great, yeah.
And then our other pinup is by an amazing illustrator that I actually met at Ontario named Jacob Sweet. So those are our two pinups in the book. And then I have to format the thank yous once the campaign is over. And that will pretty much be it until August, which is when the variant covered by the amazing Dustin Nguyen, the two-time Eisner Award winner for Descender, is offering a hand and lending his services to do a variant cover for us. So
how did you score that?
It's a trade secret. I might have had to sign away my soul.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So he just came up and was like, I can help you out with this, and I was just really honored by it. I couldn't believe it. So that secret will probably have to go to the grave with me. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, I even gave him some outs too. I was like, are you sure you just launched Ascender? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I was like, okay, but you're going to be busy. And I didn't realize this, but he also just got on the Justice League Millennium book with Brian Michael Bendis. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, wow. No, yeah, not at all.
So he's doing the Batman Beyond piece for that. And that still boggles my mind. I was like, where is he going to find time to do a cover? But he says he's going to have a little bit of time right at the end of August. So hopefully nothing delays him and everything goes well, and that we'll be able to get that out to the fans as well. So that's part of the Kickstarter. I mentioned it. It's planned, and we'll see how well I allotted time for everything.
So that must be a real confidence booster when people like that are like, hey, I'll do a pinup or I'll do a cover and stuff like that.
Yeah. It was completely unexpected, and he is an amazing artist, and he is such a friendly guy. You couldn't meet a better guy. And every time I think what happens is people mistake me for him, like when they they walk by and they see my name, they just see like the D and the win, and they're like, oh, I'm like, no,
yeah.
Dustin is at this convention, but he's like over on the other table, so I always have his table number memorized, and I love sending people his way and telling them about, because he always usually brings like these little sketches. Have you ever picked up artwork from him?
No, not at all. I mean, I know of his work, but I haven't. No, I mean, maybe I've just never run into him at conventions or anything.
Yeah, so he's, he does like those crazy full watercolor pages, and they're like thousands of dollars, right?
Yeah.
But he also takes time to really appeal to his fan base, and he does like small sketches, and they're really affordable if you like price them against anybody else. And I've picked up probably at least 5 or 6 of them from him at this point. But you know, whenever I have some change, I like to go over and be like, hey, what do you have? So I can't recommend, if he's at a convention, you just need to go visit him and pick up some original pieces, because they're stellar. And even, he can do it in like 5 lines, and you're just like, wow, like, how did you do that?
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, is he the Little Gotham guy?
Yeah,
right? Little
Gotham, Ascender, Descender.
My daughter loves that stuff. Yeah, yeah. And well, I love the artwork too, but she's the prime, she's younger, so,
yeah.
But that, yeah. What was I going to say? So, I mean, You talked a little bit about just sort of like the general idea of Pablo, but do you want to get into, without spoiling anything, a little more specific? Like, does Pablo talk? Is he a talking gorilla?
No.
What can sort of people expect when they finally get the book?
The book, I'm going to say, is pretty artist-driven. I would like to say that I hope you can't tell that I'm not a writer by trade.
oh, so you're not Brian Michael Bendis filling up the page?
I'm not Rick Remender or like Kelly Sue DeConnick. I'm not at that caliber. But I think what I put together is a really fun story that is an introduction to Pablo, and it'll have a few hints as to what's to come. I'm doing this, it's a standalone comic. I'm doing it from the perspective that I hope people that get it love it, and we can kick it into a 3 or 4 issue series. But if not, they can at least have one object that they enjoy. If it's not completely successful, it doesn't go the way that I plan it to, which I hope it does, and I think people will really like it. I had those things in mind going into it. But the story itself is self-contained. There's just hints as to what is to come or might come, and sets up the two broad strokes that are going through. So you'll get to see our protagonist, Pablo the Gorilla, and him just doing his job. And then you'll get to see the other two elements that are after him. And I think that leads into some really fun storytelling when we get to do issue 2. And I've already started plotting out issue 2.
Oh, that's great.
I think I have some pretty good ideas going in for that. And the other part of it, too, I think my dream is, if there's success in this, maybe I can put together a team that's not just myself, but, like an inker and a colorist, and maybe like a co-writer to like help me do some more nuanced storytelling. Because I don't feel like that's my suit. I feel like I'm able to think of like bigger picture things and like plot stuff out. But I think there's going to be some better dialogue work that can be done by other people. But I'm pretty happy with the dialogue work I did here. I hope it's fun and reminds you of some old school comics, because that is a big influence in my life.
Sure, sure. And is this something that you've ever wanted to, or do you think you're planning on taking it to sort of like a publisher or anything like that?
I mean, if we could acquire greater distribution, that would be amazing. But, it's like I said, for me, it's one of those things that I just wanted to put out there in the world. So it's, just like a labor of love, really.
Yeah, yeah. And were you sort of like nerve-wracked at all before you started the Kickstarter? I mean, it seems like it funded rather quickly.
Yes, to my surprise, it funded in 72 hours. So we hit funding 100%. And that's a huge thanks to friends and family and some new people who've come aboard. But it was one of those things where I was a little bit nerve-wracked at the beginning, but thankfully, and some of these people too, we all know people who've run successful Kickstarters and who may have failed in their first Kickstarter. So I spent a lot of time picking people's brains and like asking them what their experiences were, like what were some of the pitfalls to look out for. And then I spent time reading articles, and Kickstarter has a foundry of articles that's really fantastic. Like, they've really laid out what the game is, if you will, or the plan is for running Kickstarter. And do you know Terry Mayo at all?
Yes, I've actually had him on the show. I've met him once or twice. He's a super nice guy.
Yeah, so he does Wicked Righteous, and he's run some fantastic campaigns. And, he was one of those guys I talked to, and he's like, yeah, man, it takes a month of planning. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you really have to spend a month like figuring stuff out. And no joke, he was like, he was dead on about that. It took me a month of research to like get things rolling and get things started. And when we had met at WonderCon, I had already started a small newsletter, like I said, under the guidance of my wife and talking to Jeff from Cloud Wrangler, Jeff Ryder, and that was one of the things that had to get the ball rolling. So if anybody's looking to do a Kickstarter, make sure you have a newsletter email list set up and like ready to go, because that is going to be one of your prongs of attack. That's really important.
Sure. And that's You set that. You started setting that up at that WonderCon, like building that list there.
I had started a little bit before that, at the end of the year, with just like a write-in list, but the list grew at WonderCon. It grew by like 300% at that point, because I think I had like five names or something like that.
It
got to almost 100 people, because people would see my banner behind me, which has two characters. So if you ever see me at a convention, my banner has a character named Barb the Barbarian. So she's just a barbarian girl with a really huge sword. And the character below her is Pablo. So people would be like, oh, what's that? And I would explain Pablo to them. And it's a pretty easy sell. He's a cyborg gorilla that delivers pizza. And that kind of hooked people in right there. So WonderCon was where my email list really grew. And I was able to take advantage of that.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah. That's great, man. Well, you know, I mean, you've already funded, but people should still be throwing money at you. When I checked the Kickstarter page right before we started recording, it seemed like it was still ticking upwards.
Yes.
So that's really great.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the only thing I could say is like congratulations. You know, and quite honestly, like when I met you in person at WonderCon, I was like, oh, I hope I get to hang out with this dude more, because he seems really nice and genuine, and like you had a really good energy about you and stuff.
Thank
like
you.
That. Yeah, no. And I was like, oh, okay, this is somebody that I can like hang out with. I'm not just blowing smoke up your butt. So like when I saw like, oh, I'm like, that's the dude I met at WonderCon. Like I was definitely going to try and help fund it and stuff like that. So I'm glad that you were able to come on when you you were ready for interviews and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on. But yeah, you know, and talking about Kickstarter and funding, I don't think a lot of people realize that, you know, things change for backers and people will back out.
I saw something like that. Posted something like that.
Yeah, so you never know what could happen. So even though you hit 100%, you always want to go the extra mile and go for the 200%. There are Kickstarters that are like 1,094% funded.
Yeah.
And so for Pablo the Gorilla right now, we hit that 1,000. The book is going to get made. The Dustin Wynn variant cover is going to get made. Blank cover is going to get made. It's going to be a low print run. So we're hoping to put a high quality book out there. But on top of that, you know, because we want that extra distance, I'm able to provide better packaging protection. So that was our first stretch goal, because I want to make sure everybody gets their book in the best possible condition. So sure. Instead of using, you know, a lot of people use the flat mailers, we're going to flash mailers, you know, the cardboard ones.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to be doing that. And then the last three stretch goals are just to try to produce some enamel pins, which I think, you know, people are really into pins.
Ooh,
I love pins.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember my lanyard that I wear, but I have like 40 pins on that.
Oh yeah, I kind of remember like that now that you mentioned.
So I'm crazy about pins, and if you guys want to see, there are three pin designs waiting in the wings. We're pretty close to the first one. I think we're like maybe $200 or $300. Dollars away from the first pin design.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, they're going to be included in some of the mid to higher tiers, and then hopefully they'll just be available as add-ons as well for the people who don't want to contribute at a higher amount but would like to have the pins. So if we hit the goals, that opens up those pins for everybody.
Everybody loves pins.
Yeah.
My daughter loves pins. Pins, pins, pins. It's all about the pins. Yeah, no, it's great. Everyone should go check it out. I mean, it's Pablo the Gorilla. You know, go on Kickstarter or pablothegorilla.com, correct? That'll redirect.
It will redirect, yes. If you go to pablothegorilla.com, or I think even pablogorilla.com, because I have both of those.
Yeah.
It'll redirect to the Kickstarter.
And what's your Instagram again?
My Instagram is Winning It, or at Winning It. It's my last name, which is NGUYEN. The most common Vietnamese last name, INGIT. So Winning It on Instagram, on Twitter, Patreon, Reddit. I think that covers it. Yeah.
On everything. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on. You know, at the time this goes up, you know, there will be like, I think 3 or 4 days left.
Okay.
So everyone should contribute and, you know, go online and, you know, help Pablo the Gorilla, you know, deliver his pizzas.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me on. And thanks for making the time to have me on. You don't know how much I appreciate that.
No, absolutely. And are you doing any sort of appearances or conventions coming up anytime soon? Or
Yes, my next official convention will be at Rose City Comic Con. So if you're in the Portland area, I'll be up there. I don't know if I'll have the books in hand by then, because it's September, I want to say 15th, 16th, 17th or so. It's one of the weekends in September. And my projection, I had originally hoped to have them ready for that, but it may be delayed until the month after.
Okay.
So
Well, I mean, either that's supposed to be a really nice convention, and Portland
is
supposed to be a great comic city too. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I've never been to that one.
I highly recommend it. The people up there are fans. They love comics. They love original art. I was able to. They showed me so much love. It was incredible. I was able to make my table on commissions alone.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh wow. Maybe I'll have to see if I can get an Artist Alley table up there next year or something.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. I met new friends up there. Ben Hansen does Transformer art. Like, they just came out with a card game, and that dude does like those cards. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's amazing.
Crazy.
I met this dude, Clay, who's like a fantastic artist, and we talked about graffiti art and stuff. He does these like little post office label artworks, and he's got a comic out. That town is just full of amazing talent. And, you know, Oni Press is up there, Dark Horse, I believe, is there. And, you know, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Brian Michael Bendis, I believe Gail Simone is up there. So that town is just riddled with talent. And the people there are consuming comics. And they're true fans. And, you know, when they come out and cosplay, you know, they love – everything is just love of comics. And it was something special, because I feel like – We lose that a little bit in Southern California because there's just so many conventions.
Yeah.
And it's more about like, Funko Pops or like the merchandise.
Yeah. And it's also just hard to form a community, right? Because everything's so far apart.
Yeah,
it's hard to like get together and hang out, you know? Yeah. 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 No, you're absolutely right. Oh, wow. That's great. So Rose City Comic Con, right? Is that, that it? Yeah. Oh, awesome. Well, cool. Well, you know, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with the very fantastic pizza-delivering, not a gorilla, Don Nguyen. Definitely go help support his Kickstarter. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Music, you know, all the places that you listen to podcasts. Thanks for checking us out. Definitely go to Don's Kickstarter. Support, support, support. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.